Hello and welcome to this podcast from the BBC World Service. Please let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
You're listening to the BBC World Service and now Witness History. As many of our listeners around the world find themselves working from home, all this week we'll be looking at some of the breakthroughs in technology that have made it possible for millions of workers to stay connected and productive even though they aren't in the office. Some of them may even be broadcasting from under a sheet in South London. Anyway, let's get started by going back to 1975 when a group of young American computer enthusiasts first got together in California. They called themselves the Homebrew Computer Club, and they included some of the future leaders in the world of computing, such as the founders of the computer giant Apple. In 2012, Mike Lanchin spoke to two early members of the club.
It's March 5th, 1975, a rainy evening in the Bay Area of San Francisco. A group of hobbyists has gathered in a cold garage, united by a passion to challenge the old order in the world of computing.
There were people who were political activists. There were people who were conservatives. There were hippies. There were people who were more straight-laced and had real jobs. We had different backgrounds, but we were united at a unique point in time where we realized that technology was going to change the world.
It was the idea of two amateur computer enthusiasts who'd sent out invitations to schools and universities around the area, appealing for anyone interested in electronics. 30 or so young men came along to that first garage meeting of what later became known as the Homebrew Computer Club. Among them was Len Shustick.
Everybody had opinions. We got into arguments about all sorts of nitty-gritty technical issues. We got to talking about how it is you print from a computer, because printers were very expensive, and how you would enter information. But it was clear that we all had ideas. We wanted to share them. And the last thing that happened was that one of the fellows who came held up one of the latest microprocessors, the Intel 8008, and said, "Who wants it?" And everybody raised their hand, and he gave one away. And that was the start of a tradition at the Homebrew Computer Club of giving away hardware and software and freely sharing what we had and what we knew. It was a unique environment compared to industrial electronics at the time.
In the 1970s, there were no personal computers, and the electronics industry was dominated by large, powerful companies. The technology was expensive, and its distribution tightly controlled.
In those days, it was hard to find people that even thought it made sense to try to build your own computer. It seemed like an impossible task, and especially for someone that was just a high school student.
Bob Lash was still a teenager when he began building his own basic computer. But when he arrived at the Homebrew Club, he was thrilled at what he saw.
One of the members had set up his Altair and stuck a transistor radio on top of the metal cover of the machine, with no wires connecting the radio to the computer. And he flipped some of his front panel switches, and shortly thereafter, we started to hear a rendition of the Beatles' Fool on the Hill coming out of the speakers of the radio. And everybody was astonished, especially me. I mean, it was almost a stunned reaction in the room as we sat there and listened to this music. They can see that he's just a fool, and he never gives an answer, but the fool on the hill sees. Today we take it for granted that computers can play music, but to see it done there for the first time with an Altair was just a shocker. I was so excited, I ran right home that evening and rigged up a speaker to one of the bits on one of my computer's registers and set up some timing loops and had it playing some off-key renditions of some melodies that I liked.
What did your parents and your peers think of you spending so much time with a group of older guys, all enthusiasts in computers?
Well, my parents were very supportive. They were very tolerant of the long late nights I spent in a freezing garage wire wrapping components together to make my own computer. I think the most difficult thing that my mother had to come to grips with was how was it possible that I could take my entire summer's earnings with three gardening jobs and an ice cream job and spend it all on a tiny little bag of computer chips.
As the homebrew computer club grew in numbers, the garage setting was soon left behind, and the meetings moved to an auditorium belonging to Stanford University's science laboratory, known as SLAC. That's where, one evening, two of the newer members, Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs, unveiled what they'd baptised the Apple One. Bob and Len both remember that night well.
They were probably one of six or eight people who had set up tables in the back of the auditorium showing off their wares. It certainly wasn't obvious to me that their offering was any better or long-lasting than the other people who had set up on card tables there. The Apple One was a bare printed circuit board. It was a board maybe 12 inches by 15 inches full of computer components with wires dangling off it, connected to a TV monitor so that you could see what it was producing. It hardly looked like a computer. It looked like something out of an engineer's workshop, which in fact is what it was.
Everybody was very impressed at this, you know, the idea that you could connect a keyboard to this thing and have a terminal attached to a computer, and then it had its eventually, you know, its own internal display later. It was a very clever idea and a sort of a self-contained home system. But it wasn't all that unusual because all of us were designing and building our own computers. So nobody at the time really knew where all this was going to go.
Jobs and Wozniak would later build the Apple II, and out of that a hugely successful business. But how much was the Homebrew Computer Club being driven by commercial interests?
I think some people wanted to make money there. There were certainly several companies that were started, I think, as a result of people attending the Homebrew Computer Club. But I think that was the minority. I think the rest of the people were there to learn, to share. What happened was that people, after the meeting was over, would reconvene at the shopping center, which was two blocks away in the parking lot, and from the backs of their cars would buy and sell the computer equipment that Slack wouldn't let them do on site.
This type of open sourcing, sharing and dealing among the Homebrew Club members soon brought them into conflict with an emerging powerhouse in the world of computers, Bill Gates.
He got wind of the fact that we were illegally distributing copies of his software and wrote an open letter to hobbyists in the Homebrew Computer Club newsletter.
As the majority of hobbyists must be aware, most of you steal your software. Hardware must be paid for, but software is something to share. Who cares if people who worked on it get paid? I would appreciate letters from anyone who wants to pay up or has a suggestion or comment.
Well, I think we realized eventually that this open sharing of information that had been produced by other people could only be done with permission of the creator. And there began to be a recognition that for software in particular, paying for bits made sense. We all understood that if you buy a piece of equipment, a microprocessor chip, you had to pay something for it. But software was ethereal. It was just a pattern of information, and it took people a while to get used to the fact that that had value, that it cost people money to create it, and that they should be fairly compensated for that.
There remained a strong core of sharers in the club, right up until it folded in 1986. But with the fast developments in the computer world, Len says that its demise was perhaps inevitable.
I think the club was viable primarily when what they were doing was unusual, when it was the beginnings of a revolution. After 10 years had gone by, there were lots of commercial producers of personal computers. Anyone could buy one. You didn't need to be a hobbyist. And the reason for existence of the Homebrew Computer Club really disappeared. So it died out.
Len Shustick and Bob Lash spoke to Mike Lanchin in 2012 for Witness History on the BBC World Service. And in tomorrow's programme, you can hear how the world's first webcam came into being and why it focused its attention on a coffee pot.